I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. My name is Cliff and I'm about to welcome Brett and Luke back for the second part of our look at The Beatles Get Back documentary. The first part was released, it might be yesterday, it might be a week ago, but the guys are coming back on now. In this part, we're going to speak to Brett a little bit more about John Lennon. We're going to have more music from Luke at the end of the episode and a little Beatles quiz as well. So I hope you enjoy it. The lads are about to join me.
Bloody flew over that, didn't it?
It did, didn't it? We didn't really speak to you a lot in the last episode, but John Lennon's your man. What do you make of Lennon in this entire escapade?
Well, much as I've said before, I think he's off his tits, isn't he? That's the thing about him. I mean, what I was thinking is it would be nice if this was, I don't know, Sergeant Pepper or something they were making, do you know what I mean? A revolver, to see him being properly creative. That's the only thing. But I'm glad that we got what we got, you know what I mean? But he doesn't seem to add a lot, especially in that first episode. But like you've already said, once Billy Preston turns up, he kind of wakes up, doesn't he? He's got like somebody new to play with and things like that. I mean, I still think he's an absolute genius, to be perfectly honest with you, even if he is off his tits.
I think it's a combination of him. If he is on heroin, he's strung out or whatever, he's obviously not going to be as energetic as the always energetic McCartney. But I think it's also a little bit like he's in a new phase of his life as well, isn't he? He's got Yoko there, yeah. And he's doing something different. Like the Beatles isn't his number one priority anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
And I think across.
He's playing lead a lot, isn't he? Oh, he certainly is on Get Back. I love the lead guitar on Get Back. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sometimes he's playing bass on just a normal guitar, isn't he? He doesn't bother picking up bass. He's just got the
guitar. There's a bit where he says, like, oh, I wish I could, I didn't have to sing. I could just play guitar.
Yeah.
I'm quite enjoying that, which is a bit indicative of where he is, I think. I don't think he wants to be John Lennon, the lead singer of the Beatles at this point. He's quite enjoying he likes the jamming stuff, I think. Yeah. Where he's just doing silly voices and playing old songs. I think he's in his comfort zone there. I don't think he's really that bothered about the creative process like McCartney is, which is why the main songs are McCartney songs on this album.
I think he's still concerned though, like with Apple and stuff like that behind the scenes, isn't he? Because he's talking about Alan Klein, isn't he? Which obviously is bad news.
Interesting seeing that bit, isn't it, where he's on about Alan Klein? Because I think that's a really nice, not nice, but that's one of the little glimpses into the behind the scenes of the Beatles that I don't think you ever thought we would get. What about you, Luke? What do you think of Lennon in this?
I think, like you say, for Lennon, it's the documentary or the style of that sort of film is 2 or 3 years too late, in a sense, if you want to see him at the peak of his powers in terms of being a Beatle. He just seems indifferent to everything. Mm. If he is off his tits all the time, I think he does a good job of still functioning. Because he's still involved and he's still there. But he's very indifferent. He's not got any controversial opinions on anything. He doesn't argue with Paul, really, does he? Apart from the flower pot hidden microphone bit.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about that.
And maybe that's something to do with it. Maybe because the cameras are there, maybe he is behaving a little bit. But he does seem very indifferent to just about everything that's happening.
Yeah, doesn't it? Because he says, like, you know, that they're on about their trip to India and he's like, this is about finding yourself, but I wasn't myself at all. But this is my chance to do that. And I still don't think he is. Like, I still don't think he is himself. And even in that conversation after George has left in the cafeteria, I still think he doesn't say what he really means. He means to say to Paul, stop telling us what to do. I'm John Lennon. Don't tell me what to do. George, we're both the same. We both don't really listen to George, but maybe we should. And he just kind of half goes there. I don't think he really says what needs to be said to McCartney. I think he's scared of him a bit at this point.
I'm not sure about that. He does say to him, I don't like the way that you've turned some of my songs, or the direction that some of my songs have gone.
But he says,
but
I'm not going to do anything about it because you're Paul McCartney.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember that bit, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Paul McCartney's the opposite, isn't he? He's almost scared of Lennon, isn't he? Because Lennon is the boss, although not in this, is he? Because McCartney's the one driving.
Yeah, but McCartney says that. I think McCartney's a bit disingenuous in that a little bit. And when he's going, I don't want to be the guy who's telling you all what to do.
He's, like, well, that's what he's saying, isn't he?
Good fucking job of doing it if you're not that keen on it. Like, he's very happy to take that role. Somebody needs to. I'm not having a go at him for that. But I think saying, well, I don't want to be the guy that tells you what to do all the time. Mm. Like, well, maybe he could concede a little bit of ground sometimes then. Yeah. I don't know.
Because Lennon's long past being the boss at this stage. I've seen sort of some people's opinions on it, and some people say that, he was still the leader. But he didn't act like
No, anybody. He was
too laid back and reserved from that point of view. And like you say as well, Cliff, by this point, Paul said at one point, you're still the boss, you're still the... Paul didn't believe that.
No way he believes that.
There's not a little bit of me that thinks that Paul believed. Paul was the boss, and I think he was quite happy in that, but he wanted a bit more acknowledgement, I think, that he was the boss.
I agree.
Like, from Lennon as much as anyone. I don't think he was really bothered if other people sort of saw him as the boss, but he wanted John to see him as the boss.
I think he wanted him to say, well, yeah, if it wasn't for you doing this, we wouldn't do it. I think that's what he wanted him to say. But I think the thing is, I don't think John Lennon cared whether they did it or not.
No, he was so indifferent to it all. So indifferent to it.
The thing that I noticed as well, that there's no real acknowledgement from any of them. Nobody says, oh, you're great, you, or that was great. There's none of that going on, is there?
That is weird.
There's one bit with Ringo in the second episode, and he stood with, I think he stood just having a little chat with Glyn Johns.
On the piano.
They're talking about, like, who'd want to see us like this? They can't quite see where this documentary is coming together. Yeah. And McCartney's just sat there playing. It's either Let It Be or Long and Winding Road. Mm-hmm. And Ringo just looks across very lovingly, and he doesn't say, I don't think Paul hears it, but he just says, I'd pay to watch that.
I remember that bit.
So
much love in his eyes. And because he knows what Paul is. He knows how good he is. He's fully aware of it. And again, that's just Ringo, though, isn't it? It's like, I think Ringo felt like that about all three of them.
Yeah, maybe not all at the same time or not all together, but I think, like, Ringo is the one that... They all worked with Ringo after this split up, right? They didn't all work with all of them. Like, they all worked with Ringo. I think Ringo is a legend. Like, I think he's great. I think Yoko comes out with this quite well, but whether she's been kind of edited nicely, I'm not so sure.
She didn't say anything, did she?
She can't dance. Like, she's got the least rhythm. There's one bit where they're playing a song and she's like, she's got no fucking rhythm whatsoever. But I think she comes across all right. And what I think it kind of shows is, like, well, Linda's there for as much of it as she is, but nobody mentions that ever.
There's some great foresight with Paul McCartney, where he's sitting down. I think it's very similar to the bit where his eyes are filling up and stuff like that, and he's saying, you know, it's going to look ridiculous in 50 years time when people say the Beatles split up because, you know, Yoko sat on an amp. That is what people, you know, think, isn't it?
Like, it's a bit unfair, I think, like, on the basis of this, if this was meant to be, but Yoko at our worst. And
I mean, there is one part where after the meeting, when George does leave, apparently John Lennon didn't speak in that meeting, and that's why it didn't go very well. He just let Yoko speak for him, which obviously is going to piss everybody off. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
George, of all the people who couldn't give a fuck about that, like, George looked up to John so much, he would have been begging for his, like, assurances that this is your place.
Yoko did make one little comment, didn't she, before they met back up with George, and they were talking and saying, when we're going to meet him then? Are we going to meet him Wednesday? And I think Yoko said something like, well, yes, we'll meet him Wednesday then.
Yeah, yeah.
It was interesting, the way she said we. So, like you say, if she's speaking on behalf of John at that point, maybe she had to, because if it wasn't for that, he just would have sat there and not said anything.
I think that's the case.
He would have still been in bed.
I feel a little bit like maybe she was there. John Lennon's a complicated character, right? He might have been like, when they were at home, maybe they said, I'm going to go to this recording sessions, but I can't be bothered getting any conversations or arguments with these guys. So if it gets into it, will you just step in? You don't know. Like, that might have been what he said. He was, he's an anxious, drug-addled, confused guy, wasn't he, at this point?
But, there was another bit as well where he's sitting with Paul McCartney and he's saying, I was watching the television last night. I was high and I was stoned and all this. And Paul McCartney goes, do I have to do this in public, Mr. Lennon? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think
little bits like that, isn't it?
Well, McCartney's all about the appearance, right? McCartney's all about the public appearance. He's always, mm-hmm. you can tell he's putting on his best performances. Funny and a little bit sad is Lennon, despite what he's like, when you watch this, he's genuinely funny. There's loads of little bits where those little asides to the camera, he's raising his eyebrows and he's mouthing along to the song. And he does those bits, he's genuinely funny, like kind of without trying, like even when he's not really all there. And I think McCartney is such a try-hard. I think that's
Did
the thing.
Did you hear the bit about the scouts?
Yeah, the scouts. It's about wanking. About wanking. Like, it does make you very short-sighted.
But Yoko wear shorts or something like that. Yeah.
Yoko pretended she didn't get that, didn't she?
She was very confused. I think all of that just shows, like, McCartney is very try-hard, right? McCartney's trying to be as funny as Lennon and as sarcastic and stuff. And I don't think it sits well with them. Like, it's not... That's not his forte, but you can see how he like looks up to Lennon a bit in this, and he's trying to be on a par with him, but he's not. And I think it's like a little bit sad sometimes when you see him trying to make those kind of jokes and do the accents and stuff like that. It's just, that's not what McCartney's all about, I think. And it's nice to see how much he reveres him still. Even in this situation, maybe he's just trying to suck up to him to get him back in the game a bit. I don't know, but it's interesting. You're watching like all of human life over this 8 hours, really. All the jealousies, the interpersonal relationships and stuff like that. I think it's absolutely fascinating, like really fascinating.
It was also interesting to see when like Peter Sellers turned up, and Peter Sellers didn't have a clue what they were talking
didn't
about.
Didn't care about Love Ringo, didn't know what else was
didn't
going
Didn't have
on.
A clue, did he?
And after about
I found
a minute,
that,
he was like,
that,
that's
it was interesting
gone.
As well, because when Sellers walked in and they said hello, it was Ringo that jumped up and went and fetched him a seat.
Yeah.
And I think that says a lot about Ringo, because everybody else was doing everything for all of the Beatles. The Beatles didn't have to move a muscle.
Yeah.
They didn't have to get a cup of tea. They didn't have to get a sandwich. They didn't have to get a chair. Everything was done for them. They were sort of pandered to by all these sort of hanger-ons and all that sort of thing. But the minute Sellers turned up, it was Ringo that went and got a chair. And I just thought that was quite nice. I know it's a simple thing that people should do for people, but I thought it was quite nice.
But he did do it. Yeah.
I think John Lennon was kind of very impressed by Peter Sellers being there, but... Like you say, he wouldn't have moved to do anything for him.
No.
there's a part in Cynthia's book which I've read with Peter Sellers came round, I think, he was like manic and stuff like that because he wanted to impress him. So he obviously thought highly of him. Random stuff they were talking about.
What do you think about the level of food and drinks and stuff that they have? I think it's weird as fuck like that. They're having toast and tea.
Much like Bobby Robson's Ipswich Town, if you've seen that Bobby Robson documentary. They just have toast and tea. That's all they have.
It's weird, right? Like they can't look after themselves. They don't know what they want to eat or drink. They're relying on these people are clueless, really, that are bringing them. Imagine a band now of that stature eating fucking toast and having like it's weird. Like, I just I know it's a minor thing of this entire project, but I think like the way that they live their lives and what they eat and stuff like that is fascinating to us. That
that's the amount of, that's about the amount of tea I'd get through in a day. It's like, recorded, it's just on the go. It is on the go yeah. constantly.
Do you have someone that brings you a pot of tea to you, Luke?
The missus sometimes does, because I can now record from home. So she just listens out for little breaks where she doesn't think I'm recording. And she'll sometimes bring me one. If she's on the ball and it's a good day. But it's we are very much a band that when we get together and we have our like band meetings, or we get together and maybe go over some demos and stuff, it's straight away pop the pot of teas on, and there's lots of top ups. Not so much the marmalade on toast.
I've set the top of marmalade too much. It's weird. Like, I don't get it. Also, I think, look, there's George and Ringo and Glyn Johns, absolutely fantastic dressers all the way through this. Paul, I'm not sure about Paul's outfits in this, to be honest.
I like his waistcoats.
His waistcoats are all right, but I think he's not at his best. And John just looks fucking scruffy all the way through. I think he's
John doesn't look like he's in the 60s. That's the strange thing about John. When I look at John, and maybe that's my sort of wrong perception of things, but he looks like he's probably like early 90s to me. It's a strange one. It's like they've taken him from a different time zone.
You see him playing the piano, he's got dirty fingernails and all that. He's like, I'm not a big fan of John.
He was only 29, and you look at him and you think, fucking hell.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? Like, when he died, he was 40. He's an old 40 when he died. He's an old 29 at this point.
Well, he looked older than 40 when they were recording this.
But I think the great, this is also one of the things.
Looks fucking mint.
I think like there's parts of it where he looks great, but I don't think he looks like a 29-year-old fella. I think there's also bits where you've got to kind of pinch yourself and realize McCartney's 28, Harrison's 27. Like, these are young blokes. Like, imagine
Billy Preston was only 22.
Was he?
Yeah, 22.
Really?
He can't. How old was he in Hamburg?
That means he would have been 12 in Hamburg.
But he was dead young. He was dead young when he was out in Germany. He was 22. I'm sure I saw that.
That's mad.
He'd been 12 in Germany.
I'm double checking that now as we speak, but I'm sure he was.
McCartney's 28 and he's at the peak of his powers. The end of the Beatles, and he's only 28. Harrison's 27, like, and he's just coming into his own. Of course, he's into Cure. Of course, these guys, Lennon included, of course, they don't really know what they're doing. Like, they've lived their entire adult life up to this point, cosseted the most famous guys in the world, the geniuses of all pop and rock music. Of course, if they're having a bit of a crisis of confidence, they don't really know what to do with themselves. And of course,
that, isn't there? Because they're talking about, like, we're nervous about playing live. Mm-hmm. They haven't done it for so long type stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they're the Beatles. It's like, you don't think of having that crisis of confidence.
And this is another thing that I think we're experiencing this retrospectively, right? And we're experiencing the Beatles retrospectively. So let it be to us is the last album, it's not as good as the rest of the albums, like, essentially. But there's some good songs on
in
there.
Your opinion, Paul.
Yeah, but when you think about what it must have been like to experience it, like, they'd gone from being they were weirdos and outsiders at this point. They weren't, after Sgt. Pepper, the White Album, they've all gone their separate ways. They're all like long hair and beards and Indian music and all of this kind of stuff. They're not the popular figures that they were 3 years earlier, but we don't get that.
Well, I think Magical Mystery Tour might have had something to do with that.
Yeah, well, exactly. Exactly. Mm. So
there's one of them guys in the street that's interviewed towards the end of the documentary where they said, "Oh, do you like the Beatles?" And he's probably only in his mid-20s. He goes, no, they've changed. Yeah,
that guy is an absolute...
Yeah, yeah.
He's like,
he's a prick, isn't he?
What? Nope. History looks back on him as being a right twat.
And then they look back on that old guy with the hat
on. Isn't there a guy?
Like, what, lovely bunch of fellas.
Yeah.
Would you let him go out with your daughter?
Of course I would.
He was like, yeah, they've got money.
Little cheeky smile. There's a bloke that turns up at like the Apple offices and that, and he goes, what's going on? What's this noise and stuff? It's almost the same guy. The one that's complaining in the street. Yeah.
But I think, you know, this all builds up to finally they realise we haven't got any songs. Or what we're doing, we're just doing the same stuff over and over again, which is frustrating. But then McCartney's like, well, hang on, let's list them. We've got 10, 11 songs here. We think we haven't got any. Let's go and do this rooftop, see how many we get. Let's do the five that we know we can do. Then let's record the other ones afterwards. So it all builds up to the rooftop concept, which everybody kind of knows. But I love the footage of that at the end of this. I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
All of those different camera angles. This is the only bit where Michael Lindsay Hogg has earned his money, I think.
I've got a question for Luke, though, because he's a musician. So how many takes, or what's the most takes you've done on a song, Luke?
We record a rhythm track normally to get the drums, maybe one guitar and the bass down. We normally don't go above three takes. We normally, because as soon as you go above three takes, you start not playing it with the same sort of feel. It starts to become a bit of a chore. If something we haven't got it down in three takes, we have then come back to it. But sometimes we'll come back to it in a different session altogether. But most of the songs that we've ever released, the original bass track that the bass of the track that we put down is normally three takes.
There's too much time in this. This is the thing, like the Beatles. What the Beatles achieved in the time they were active is absolutely amazing. There's a bit where Lennon says in this, actually, where they're talking about putting Get Back out, and George is like, just put it out. It can be out tomorrow. You can get it mastered and out. And I'm like, yeah, just fucking do it. That's what this entire project's meant to be about. And John says, yeah, like normally we would have a single out, and while that one's out, we're finishing the next one.
Yeah.
And that's how they usually operated, right? But they've obviously taken more time between White Album and this. And there's malaise, like they don't know what to do with that extra time. They've given themselves 21 days to write an album, but they could have recorded this album in 2 days.
Also, the time frame of it all was so arbitrary, really. The only reason it is done. The only reason was because Ringo was going away to do a film.
And Glyn Johns is going to record Beggar's Banquet or something like that.
There's no reason why they couldn't have said, well, okay, should we come back in February, March? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It have to be done.
Yeah,
they set themselves this target. And maybe it wouldn't have happened if they didn't do it in January. Maybe it would have never then got done. But it does seem very arbitrary. Like, the documentary makes a big thing of that at the start. It's like, they've got 21 days to do this.
Frames this film. I get that. But it is a self-imposed thing. Like the Beatles, they could be like, well,
do what they want.
Well, fuck the magic Christian. It's almost as if
because it was the idea for a TV show, and you know, the rehearsing all these songs, writing them, and then it's leading up to a TV appearance, that's stuck in their heads.
Yeah.
I think, you know what I mean?
And they get muddied by that, and they talk. There's so many points where they're saying, what is it we're doing? Like, why were we just sit playing these songs over and over again? Like, are we just rehearsing for this TV show? And it's weird that they can't like think clearly about what they're doing. Like, they don't seem to, maybe because they're in the moment, right? Maybe they just don't get it. But they're like, why are we playing these songs over and over again? Like, I don't get it. What we do, we're not even doing this TV show anymore, so why are we doing it? And McCartney's like, well, we can do an album. And Lennon's going, we don't have enough songs. He's like, well, what do you think?
But then you've
doing?
Also got George going, well, I don't, all I want to do is play the guitar. They're all at kind of odds with each other at the same time.
It's aimless, you know what I mean? The entire project's aimless. Yeah. Their rehearsals are aimless. And I think one of the great things is you've got the concert, right? Which is brilliant. It's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Their performance, the fact that they were shoehorned into doing this rooftop performance is the best thing that could have happened to them. Otherwise, they would have still been fucking singing Everly Brothers songs through their teeth for another like 5 months
which
or whatever.
Which is also amazing.
On a bunch of scaffold boards that looked like they were about to give way at any point.
Yeah, I mean,
as well.
not like a good...
When Ringo went up and looked how stable or unstable his kit was,
and McCartney
was like,
jumps on them, I'm like, don't jump on it. And the wind is blowing, it must have sounded terrible. Like, it's not a great setup.
It's amazing. It's amazing what came out of it.
Yeah, and the actual recorded versions are more superb. But if you think, if they didn't have that, they probably would still be jamming on shit now, 50 years later. They were so aimless. And I think one of the best indicators of that is the rooftop performance finishes, and then it goes, McCartney said, well, let's go back in the studio and do the other songs. And then, and I think Peter Jackson's doing this on purpose, they just start doing the stupid stuff again. And you're like, for fuck's sake, can you just record those songs and get it finished? Like,
the thing is, right at the start in the first episode, they're talking about what they should do for a live show or whatever. And McCartney's the one that really comes up with the idea because he goes, well, we should trespass. We should go somewhere.
He says,
oh,
it would be amazing
should...
if we got arrested. Imagine that.
Exactly. He's like, he says it really early. At the start. Really early.
And there's one bit on the roof as well with that the whole thing about doing something that shouldn't be. Do you know when the police eventually do get up? And let's face it, Mal Evans and that receptionist did the most amazing stalling job.
She just used to go,
I don't know. Who are you? Where are they?
They were brilliant. There was that bit where Mal eventually brought the two police up onto the roof, and they're doing a take, and McCartney just turns around and sees the police, and he turns around, and all of a sudden he gets excited like a 6-year-old seeing a bag of sweets. It's an amazing moment, and then again
he starts riffing on, I've got to get arrested.
100%.
I think that bit's great. Like, but.
And then George turning his amp back on after Mal turned it off.
Mal's basically bullshitting these policemen who know nothing about music or amplifiers or anything. Like, I'll just turn the PA system around, whatever. And then after about 20 minutes, they're like, can we go and have a look? And obviously Mal has to turn something off at that point. And then George is just like, all right, then I'll put it back on. Start playing again.
Because one of the police says, "Well, can't they just dub the sound over the top of the floor?" I don't know. I'm not sure. They
might
be.
There's some great interviews with that policeman, by the way, Ray Shaler. There's some great interviews with him in like recent times about his part in all of this. Yeah. So it's worth Googling.
His mate's the grumpiest policeman I've ever seen in my life. He's brilliant. Why don't they make policemen's hats to fit them?
Yeah, just go over the foot of their face.
Yeah, just right on that chin.
Coming right under the lip.
I know.
But how he just keeps saying, it's not necessary though, is it? Like, no, it's not necessary. Of course it's not. Like, they're making music. It's not necessary at all. Anyway, I just thought it was great. But I've got a quick quiz hopefully we can get on to. But before we get on to that, I wanted to say there's a few things I don't think we've touched on, but outside of that, we haven't actually talked about the album that much and the songs on the album. I think for me that some of these songs resonate even more after watching this film. I think there's some great performances.
Especially when you can now listen to the album and look back and you see the process of how it was made.
Yeah.
I think that with any music, with any song, it's really knowing soulful. The story behind it, it does help.
I think it's proper soulful, like kind of rock music, like the way that they were still breaking new ground. This was meant to be doing old stuff, but I think the songs like, I mean, Brett, me and you have always loved I've Got a Feeling and Two of Us and stuff
Two
like
of
that.
Us, yeah.
I think I've Got a Feeling. It just gets better and better and better every time I hear it.
Yes, I love a lot of the songs off this album. The Two of Us, especially, it's like Lennon McCartney sort of singing to each other, like a nostalgic sort of, which is a lot of what they're doing, isn't it? I think McCartney says, like,
I think what
we're just sitting here talking about the past. Do you
I
know
think
what
it's
I mean?
Weird that
remember
I think
when
they
we
do
used
that.
To rock?
I think they do that without consciously thinking about it. I think that's the genius about why this actually is a great album and why it is a genius kind of thing. They've come up with this concept that wasn't really fully formed But the idea of let's all get in a room together and play music like we used to. And even though it didn't end up being that, the songs actually are that.
Like, yeah,
most of them.
I agree.
Not the McCartney ballads.
When we started, we were a Beatles tribute act, only for about the first year or so. But it wasn't until watching the film and you sort of look closely at it, you think, yeah, we must have liked this album even at the time when we were first playing, because we used to do 8 of these live in our sets. And no one, if you ever said to me, like, did you do Much You Let It Be? I wouldn't have really thought much about it. And I'd be like, oh, we did a couple, but we did 8 of these live. And they're fun ones to play live, but also because of the way the Beatles did them and recorded them, They're doable as a live act.
So
there's certain things like on Revolver that's hard to replicate on stage. Let It Be wasn't hard to replicate.
And so, I think like the song Get Back, how that came about, we were talking about that McCartney a little bit, but how it then turned into a song. And also that's one of the bits where George is saying, I think we should do this. And McCartney's a bit dismissive. But actually what George suggests, if you listen to those guitar parts that George plays and that outside of Lennon's really good solos, like George is right, how he's saying that should the kind of downward chords and that choppy guitar bit that just kind of drives that rhythm. It's a really like rhythmic kind of.
The other thing it pays to is like the rumors that he's saying that the Yoko or whatever get back. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, because that was the rumor, it's not about that at all. Do you know what I mean?
So seems to be like kind of riffing on racism and Enoch
Powell. That's what it's like about, isn't it? It was a protest song originally, wasn't it?
But I think it's great. But get it be, let it be naked. Has anybody listened to that more than once?
I've listened to it recently, actually. It's got a lot of the Glyn Jones stuff, isn't it?
At the time when it came out, I used to listen to it. And I think when it first came out, I probably liked it more than Let It Be. But then as time went by, I went back to the original version again.
Yeah, I think it's a halfway house, I think.
Shall we talk about Spector then and what he did?
Well, he just added Spector strings to it, didn't he? Like they get, like...
But that was a massive part of why the court case sort of, you know, when they broke up, wasn't it? McCartney said that they've changed his song around without his permission and all that kind of stuff.
I don't think that would have happened without his permission. Like, I think that's a bit bullshit.
You think?
I know what happened, how the thing progressed, but if McCartney didn't want that to happen, surely he could have just stopped that from happening.
Yeah, you think McCartney had enough power to not let something like that happen. But again, if they got to that point where they were struggling communication-wise with each other,
someone gets signed off
without realising what you're signing off. And
so Glyn John's version of the album is something that the Get Back album is a bootleg I've always wanted to have and I've never had it. But imagine if that had come out. I think what the Beatles were doing anyway was quite brave in this fly on the wall, watch us record and write songs and see how we get onto it. And all the while, we're not being very nice to each other or whatever. But imagine if the Glyn Johns version of this album had come out with all those mistakes in and a false start and stuff like that. It's mental. Mm-hmm. Like another point of why they're a revolutionary band. Like that's what they wanted to happen. Mm-hmm. I think it's crazy. What do you think of that version, Luke or Brett?
Sorry, I'll let Luke answer that. But what I read is that Lennon, I mean, they didn't like it. All the Beatles didn't like it or whatever.
They rejected two versions of it.
Yeah. But Lennon said, like, afterwards, probably retrospectively, we wanted people to hear that wash it. Do you know what
well,
I mean?
That was the idea, right? We weren't great with all the overdubs and stuff. I think that was the idea, and then they heard it, and they were like, we can't release this one.
Oh, shit. Yeah, exactly.
But that was what they wanted in the first place.
I really like the little bits between and the little interludes and the messing around and the noises you hear. I don't like something to be too polished. So from that point of view, that Let It Be is sort of...
Yeah, but imagine...
That's why we love the anthology, isn't it?
Yeah.
For that?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Imagine that coming out at the time and it begins with One After 909 and that false start. Imagine that was the new Beatles album, the next Beatles album. And then it goes into Don't Let Me Down, and they don't know what they're playing. Like, imagine that was the
actual
album.
I can see why they're not for everyone, and I can see why you have to be a certain type of fan to, for example, love Anthology and just be able to sit through and listen to the whole of Anthology. I can see why people couldn't do that if you're not a massive...
But I'm not necessarily saying that that's a bad thing, that that would have come out, but I'm just saying, like, imagine the biggest band in the world bringing out an album where they fuck every song up. Like, it's crazy that they would even consider
it's like Spinal Tap.
And I think that's what happened. Like, when they listened to it back, they were like, yeah, we can't release this. I think they had all the great intentions to do it, but then they didn't want to do it. Anyway, let's have a Beatles quiz. I've got 10 questions and then we're going to say goodbye. I don't know how we're going to do it. I'm just going to read the questions out. What's the name of the drummer who replaced Ringo for some gigs in the 60s and that they talk about?
The one that they're talking about?
Yeah.
Nichols.
Brett, any advance?
Stevie Nichols.
Yeah. Go on. No, what is it?
Jimmy Nichol.
Jimmy Nichol.
Yeah.
I think I get a point for that.
He's quite good, actually. If you
awful point.
If you Google him, there's a bit of reading about him.
Quite a sad story, that.
Yeah, it's a bit weird, isn't it? But a lot of reading to be done. What was the first George song recorded by the Beatles? I think it's on with the Beatles. Don't bother me. Whatever. Thought you were Beatles nerds. Which American city hosted the last ever Beatles concert?
It's Shea Stadium. Where's Shea Stadium?
New York.
No, it's Candlestick Park in San Francisco.
Bloody hell!
What is the name of Brian Epstein's autobiography?
Ooh.
Stumped you all. I thought
the fifth Beatle.
No, it's called A Cellar Full of Noise. Fancy that. There's only one Beatles album that is all Lennon and McCartney compositions.
Hard Day's Night.
Yes. Got it.
Hard Day's Night.
What was the last Beatles recording session? Last ever Beatles recording session. Do you know what it was?
Well, are you technically counting Free as a Bird sessions where they did all the overdubs?
No.
Were they all together and alive?
While the Beatles were still in existence. The last session was on January the 3rd, 1970.
Were they all together?
No. Lennon was gone. So it was only McCartney, Harrison and Ringo. And it was I, Me, Mine. And that's the song that appeared on the Let It Be album because they didn't have a version of it before that. And apparently they needed it. Because it was meant to be a soundtrack to the film, and it was in the film, but they didn't actually record it when they were filmed. I don't know, fucking hell.
Well, we did well at that, Luke, didn't we?
Well, it's easy when you've got the questions in front of you, though, isn't it?
Of course it is. That's why he's done them.
What's the shortest Beatles song?
Shortest.
Her Majesty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who's in the front when they're crossing the road on the Abbey Road album?
George.
No, it's John.
Oh, fucking hell.
I thought it was
George. He's looking around the room. He's got it somewhere in there.
I thought it was George. And I definitely thought Luke would have that somewhere.
Yeah, it's right in front of him.
Well, that was a bit of a shit quiz, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'll be sacked from any future Beatle podcast now.
Well, Luke, thank you so much. We've got your new single on now. Tell us what it is.
This one is about my second born. So last Christmas we released Dear Genevieve about my eldest.
Yep.
And as soon as I released that, I realised I had to quickly write another one for the next one. So this one's called Lola Emmeline. She's named after the Kinks song. So I added the middle name in so it wasn't exactly the same title. So yeah, this one's called Lola Emmeline, and it will go towards what becomes the third album. But that is in progress at the minute, and it's not even close to being done. It's some way off, but hopefully late next year. But this is called Lola Emmeline.
Well, great. It's a nice little indicator of what the rest of the album will be like, maybe. Thanks for listening, everyone. Luke, thank you so much. Cheers.
Thanks,
fans and everyone. Take care. Thanks for listening to us ramble about the Beatles. See you next time.
There were times when I thought we were dreaming, but girl, now you have us believing in the love that you bring, Lola Emmeline. A beautiful autumn breeze or a bird song.
watching, wishing, been waiting. As adventure fills your mind and you share it with everyone close to me. You don't need no plan. You see how life passed. Keep smiling with your eyes and be happy. Hold us tight and keep us laughing with you. They say that nothing lasts forever. They don't know what we feel for you. And if I ever go on too much, well, please don't be confused. Deep down I would do anything for you. My love don't have no conditions. Just be you. When the sun sets early evening and sparkles on the green sea, next to you they don't matter to me. You build your eyes and you share it with everyone close to me.